Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
The bases are loaded. The 3-2 pitch with one out, a swing, and a high fly ball left field. And that is over Nootbaar's head, and Nootbaar can't catch it. The ball hits the track. Here comes Canario. The Pirates win 2-1. A single and an RBI. Roy Croft is the loser. Lawrence the winner. And the Pirates take 2 out of 3. They won today in 13, 2-1.
Yo, Paulie!
Paulie's a great name.
Yo, Paulie!
What'd you do for Paulie? Anything?
Me, Paulie! I was responsible!
Paulie, we're here because of you! Okay, first of all, they didn't die.
They went to the 13th inning.
It's bad.
I feel like crying. This was like the last Cardinals game of all time. That's how this feels. It has been frustrated. Matt Pauly, host of KMOX's Sports Open Line and the Redbird Rush Hour. He does the Cardinals pre and post game. You've heard him there, too. He's all over the place. Matt, something of a debacle yesterday. I'll let you pick where you want to start. What stands out most to you from that game? The Cardinals losing in 13 innings, 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, there were just so many things that happened in that game, to your point. The decision to send Michael Ciani, the weird play with Thomas Tejesi getting blocked off by a couple runners or a couple fielders that were basically laying down in the lane. Some decisions that were made. Eric Fetty coming out when he did the decision to go to Steven Matz after Ryan Helsley had thrown 10 pitches. Like, it was just one of those. Kevin Wheeler and I had a lot of fun yesterday on the Redbird Rush Hour because all of those kind of inflection points of the game are really fun to talk through.
Yeah, it's been. Well, let me jump to the play at the plate where the pitcher and the catcher for the Pirates ran into each other.
Yeah.
I'm mind blanking. Who was the runner?
It was
the
Cardinals.
Tejesi. Okay. So yeah. With Tejesi, kind of a weird spot because the base path was blocked. So I guess you either go around the pileup, you jump over the pileup. He did hesitate a bit. Do you not put any blame on him because it was such a weird situation, or should he have maybe barreled through a little bit more aggressively?
No, I give him a complete free pass on that one because that's not something that you experience very often. You're running down the line, and then all of a sudden there's two human bodies that are laying literally between third base and home. Like, what do you do in that split second? I think if he does, like, jump over them or make contact with them, at that point the umpire probably calls obstruction and the run scores. Now, I would argue obstruction should have been called no matter what. Like, you create your baseline when you're running. So, like, when you are a runner going from first to second, you establish what your baseline is going to be, and that's what you get. And as a runner, like, if you go out of that baseline on your own, that's, you're not supposed to do that. But if somebody pushes you out of it, then it's obstruction. So I would, you know, the rule book does not say that you have to make contact in a situation for an umpire to call obstruction. So I feel like the umpires should have called obstruction in that moment. But once they didn't, there wasn't really anything that can be done because that's not a reviewable play.
And also, going back to, again, the extra innings, a lot of extra inning games, it seems, so far this season. But, man, the Cardinals cannot get their offense to align with their pitching. Because here you go. Here you have a game where the pitchers, they keep you in it, but you can't score. It's that,
yeah, I mean, look,
that back and forth, the seesaw again.
I get what you're saying, and I think that's true for yesterday. But they've been really good offensively all year long, and they had the first game yesterday where they hadn't scored four runs. So it happens. Like, that's just baseball. That happens a lot where it's like, what's going on? You sit there and you've been scoring a ton of runs all year long, and then all of a sudden you're playing 13 innings and you score one run and you don't score for the first 11 innings. So I think that's just baseball. I'm not taking too much from that.
How about that start yesterday, though? Six scoreless innings. That was what was he doing right?
Yeah, you know what? I would argue actually that he wasn't like overly sharp in Eric Fetty, because he does issue four walks. So the fact that he does not give a hit up through six innings, like, he really pitched well, but I didn't think he was like dominant. I just thought he had his pitches working. He was able to mostly be around. It was really weird. He kept issuing leadoff walks, and then the Cardinals would turn a double play behind him. So it was like it was taking him a moment to kind of lock in on each inning. But Fetty was really good. He was really good. He doesn't give up a run. He doesn't give up a hit through six innings. There was some controversy after the game because he was lifted with a no-hitter going.
Yeah.
To me, that wasn't even a controversy. Like, he was at 88 pitches through six innings. He was never going to get the no-hitter. So that trying to leave him in just because it was a no-hitter, that's something that I don't agree with. But I did think it was an interesting conversation about should have he tried to go one more inning because he's at 88 pitches and the bullpen has been used so much lately. Do you bring him back out for the seventh just to try to get one more inning out of him and one less inning on the bullpen? I think that's actually the more interesting conversation to have than should have he been going for the no-hitter, because that just wasn't going to happen yesterday.
Does the type of pitcher that you are determine maybe how many pitches your club wants you throwing, meaning whether you're just, you know, hurling fastballs the whole time or maybe a more strategic pitcher, and is it maybe not as much pressure on the arm, or no matter what kind of pitcher you are, you're only going to throw so many pitches?
No, it does make a difference. Actually, I talked about this yesterday on Sports Open Line because I was making the point that I just made, and somebody called up and said, well, what about Paul Skeens? He's this young guy, was cold the other day, he was losing, and he still went out and threw over 90 pitches. Why did the Pirates let him do that? Well, my answer is Paul Skeens is like, he's a different kind of guy. This dude's a horse. Like, his body is built to throw 100 pitches, and he is a unicorn. Like, those people just do not exist for the most part, but Skeens does. So trying to invoke, well, Paul Skeens did this, so Eric Fetty should have done that, I argue that that's not really a fair comparison, because Skeens is such a different kind of guy. So now, one of the arguments to why Fetty should have actually stayed in longer yesterday is because he's at 88 pitches, and I didn't think there was a lot of stress on his arm. Yeah, he does issue the four walks, but like I said a moment ago, it was a lot of leadoff walks that he got a double play behind, so it was a really stress-free 88. Like, not all 88 pitch outings are created the same, and I thought it was he was kind of free and easy yesterday. You know, as far as his makeup and what he was throwing a lot, he's not a guy that throws super hard. He throws that sinker a lot. That was his number one pitch. That was something that maxed out at about 93 miles per hour yesterday. He's going to go throw the sweeper. That's a big pitch for him. So he's a sweeper, changeup, sinker kind of guy. He'll throw the cutter as well. But no, I mean, this guy isn't a super high velocity guy. So that would actually lead towards him being somebody who maybe could go a little bit longer than he did yesterday.
So, Matt, now they come back to town on Friday. They take on Philadelphia. I get frustrated early in the season when we have these days off because I want to get into the routine of watching Cardinal and listening to Cardinal baseball every day. How important are these days off at the beginning of a season?
They're big because pitching injuries are more prevalent early on in the season. And I think you're going back to what we were just talking about a moment ago, that's part of the reason why Eric Fetty gets lifted after 88 pitches. They are clearly trying to ease these pitchers into the season and not put too much stress on them right at the beginning of the year. Major League Baseball did this big study, it was all about pitching injuries. And what you're going to learn is that pitching injuries happen a lot more often during spring training and during the first month of the season than they do the rest of the time. So getting these off days, getting a chance to reset your bullpen, giving everybody an extra day, that's key. And I know it's frustrating because, like you said, there's people who want to watch and listen to baseball every single day, mm-hmm. but these off days are pretty darn important.
All right, Matt, we got a Blues fan complaining on the text line that we're only a handful of games into the Cardinals season, but the Blues are in a playoff race. So let's talk St. Louis Blues because they did lose to the Edmonton Oilers 4-3 last night. And you got to hand it to the Oilers because they were missing Leon Draisaitl, an absolute stud. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Matthias Ekholm, Jake Walman. They only dressed five defensemen, but superstar Connor McDavid, he returned to the lineup for the first time since March 20th, and he always impacts a game. So a tough loss for the Blues, a gutsy win for the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, that's frustrating because you were, 21 seconds away from getting at least a point when Connor Brown scores that goal last night. And the Blues got off to a really good start. You know, that was there was the play where basically a skate was coming in on the neck of Jordan Binnington, and then he goes after the guy. Like, that's a really scary situation. And then Ryan Suter scores the shorty just a few moments later. So it was a good start for the team. Obviously, they were able to tie the game up twice in the third period with Kyrou and Buchnevich each scoring. That's a frustrating loss. You want to secure your playoff spot, and you just want to have a little bit of momentum. And anytime you have a long winning streak and then you lose a game, I'm always worried about that exhale.
Yeah.
That, you know, it takes a moment or so to get locked back in. So an unfortunate loss last night for the Blues. I still think they are in really good shape for where they're at. But at the very least, you really wish they could have at least gotten that point last night that they were 21 seconds away from getting.
Well, and that's right. And it's kind of like the last few minutes of the game are the most uncertain for me when it comes to the Blues. Not because if you're, let's say you're ahead, right, you're playing 6-on-5, whether it's a tied game, whatever it may be, those last few minutes of the game are the only minutes that concern me about this team because when you start to see a pattern that somehow something's breaking down. Now, granted, they had a 12-game winning streak, and I was complaining about this, so that's probably me, you know, splitting hairs here. And Connor McDavid, out of the penalty box, right, anytime he's on the ice, his ability to assist, create plays, make goals happen, make high quality scoring chances happen. There's no one else like him out there. But a little frustrating, like you said, because the points are so valuable.
Yeah, you want to get that playoff spot locked in, and let's also give the Blues credit. They've had a lot of situations late in regulation during that winning streak where they were tied and they got the game winner, or they were down a goal and they were able to force overtime. So the final few moments of Blues games for the last month or so, it's been wild, and there's been a lot of good things that have happened, some not so good things that have happened. Yesterday goes under that not so good umbrella.
Yep. Well, Matt, do we have Sports Open Line tonight, correct?
We do. Yeah, full 2-hour program this evening.
Nice. That's a don't come all the time with all the Cardinal games we've got. Anything you want to let the people know about it?
I think we're going to have a Battlehawks player on tonight, and I think Taylor Twellman is going to join us tonight, so we're working on a few things.
Excellent. Good. Looking forward to 6 to 8 on 104.1 yes. FM, Matt Pauly.
You said that like it was a question, 6 to 8?
I know. You know, I'm doubting everything, Matt, because I've decided that David Fries should be in the Cardinals Hall of Fame after originally not thinking he should, so I just think I'm an idiot. So now I doubt everything.
I respect his decision when he made it last year. That was last year, right? Or was it 2 years ago? Anyways, whenever he made that decision, I respected the decision that he made. But I'm a big believer that Hall of Fames are like, they're for the fans, right?
Yeah.
That this is, it's for the player, but it's also for the fans. And if fans vote the guy in, I kind of lament on his behalf that he felt the way that he felt because fans voted him in. I would have loved for him to accept the honor, but I also respect him and understand the reason he didn't.
Thank you, Matt.
You bet.
Yo, Paul Lear, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
That is Matt Pauly, Sports Open Line 6-8, question mark, 104.1 FM. He's Michael Kelly. I'm Amy Markscores. This is what I discovered last night. I didn't discover it. I think I maybe just lamented it. Life gets more expensive as you get older.
Oh, doesn't it cost you like $20 to wake up these days?
Seriously.
Just to wake up.
Seriously.
It's going to cost you $20.
We're talking about that next on the Chris and Amy Show.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time is subject to change. Max one offer per account.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
1120 AM, 104.1 FM, and streaming on the Odyssey app. KMOX is with you however you listen, wherever you listen.
Tell me, David. Why do you want this job?
I ran out of eye cream.
Okay, you're not going to get this job. You're not going to get this job. You know why? Your attitude sucks.
Okay.
And look at how you're dressed. What is this? Colostomy bag pants.
Oh.
I'm the manager of a family-run grocery store. I'm not going to hire you. You're not going to get the job. You're the last person.
Why do you want this job? I ran out of eye cream. And I did. I did run out of eye cream. And here's the thing, Michael. I know it's so obvious that life gets more expensive as you get older.
Okay.
It is so expensive. Like, not only because of inflation and things get more expensive. It's more expensive because my body, my face, my skin, whatever. I'm like that wagon in the Bugs Bunny cartoon where the wheels are falling off and the seat's coming off and it's just taking more to hold the wagon together all day long.
Right.
I'm the wagon. And let me tell you, Michael, do you know what I bought last night? Eye cream.
Okay.
I bought face cream.
What does the eye cream do?
Well, it's supposed to make me beautiful and young.
Well, it's all right. It's doing a good job.
No, it's not. Here's the thing. I believe this stuff. I fall for it, but you want your skin to be good and your skin needs to be moisturized and get rid of the sunspots and even out the skin tone. I bought my eye cream or my face cream because eye cream is actually more expensive than face cream. Guess how much my face cream was at Target?
I'm guessing $20.
$65.
How?
At Target. And like I said,
for your eye cream?
For my face cream. The eye cream.
For your face cream.
You know the brand Clarins? I hope if there are like women out there listening, Clarins is an old school brand. I like it because like it's sentimental to me. My mom used to use Clarins. My mom's still alive. She was younger. She used Clarins. My mom now uses other face cream. She's not dead. My mom uses other face cream. But I was like, oh my gosh, I saw Target carries Clarins. And I thought, I want to buy this Clarins eye serum.
Okay.
And it's a little one.
Yeah, it's like
ounce.
A dauber.
It's
right?
A 1 ounce bottle of eye serum. Well, the 1.7 ounce, I should say.
Right.
$185.
For cream.
Serum.
Or for serum.
For your
now,
eyes.
Is this the kind of serum that when you put it on, like if you did a 20-minute time elapse,
no.
All of a sudden the eyes go from
no, that's
being Wilford Brimley to a 12-year-old?
That's Plexiderm. And that is temporary. That's a temporary fix, the Wilford Brimley to a 12-year-old. We've all seen those commercials.
What's the difference between eye cream and face cream? I mean, it's all the same area.
So face cream goes over your whole face. Eye cream, because the skin around your eyes is so delicate.
Really? Okay.
And because you want to really put the good stuff there, you get this tiny, tiny little, like a little microscopic little cup of eye cream.
Yeah.
And it is $200. I didn't buy that. I bought the $65 eye cream, which I walked out of Target with this insane receipt and one bag. Dry shampoo. had some dry shampoo from Target. Again, it's not like I'm going to Saks Fifth Avenue to pick up my eye cream. I go to Target and I get dry shampoo to spray on your hair so you don't have to wash your hair that day. It's $28.
Wow.
So I flagged down the little lady at the self-checkout and I said, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize this was $28. And she goes, oh my gosh, that's so expensive. I go, can you take this off? I don't want to buy this tonight. That's too much because I'm buying my face cream.
Right. I'm already investing in that region of the body.
Now, the face cream told me that I'll see results.
Did it? Yes. Is this got that ingredient? What's the stuff that
hyaluronic
traveled?
Acid?
Yes. I've traveled to Mexico with girls who, girls, men
so
and women,
scandalous.
But girls specifically want to go to the pharmacies because they can get some type of cream that you don't need a prescription for. Good for your
face.
Now you understand why it's girls.
Yeah, that's retinol.
What's that?
That like eats this. It's vitamin A, kind of like it eats the skin, the dead skin off your face. I don't buy that. I think I spend too much time outside because you have to be really careful if you use retinol cream because it makes it, you know, it brings out the baby skin, the new skin. So you want to wear a lot of sunscreen and don't spend time in the sun or you'll get sunspots. So I haven't done retinol because I'm just always outside running or, like I said, being in the mountains. Well, you could fry your face. If I used retinol and then went in the mountains, I'd fry my face.
Well, I'm not saying this because I'm sitting across from you. Your face is great. Your face is flawless. You don't need to be doing this stuff.
No,
but I have to tell you, as a boy.
Yes.
This is one of the things I'm grateful for in life is that I'm pretty ignorant to most of the creams and lotions that are being applied to faces.
It's good for boys too.
I guess,
face cream
but I mean,
great
but
boys.
it's not as accepted or expected of men. I think I should learn a routine and maybe.
Here's the deal.
Good goodness, I mean, this pig could use a little lipstick, so maybe it could work out.
If you take me to see Les Mis,
I know.
I will take you to find some eye cream.
You're going
to
put me on a facial regimen?
Yes. Or, I'll take you to find some eye cream.
I do know that when you rub on your face, you're not supposed to use your index finger. You're supposed to use...
like pat with your ring finger?
Yeah, your outside fingers because you're less likely to put it into your eyes and stuff.
Well, and you don't want to
stretch
the skin.
I've witnessed enough of this application process to understand
you go to Mexico with a lot of ladies.
But it is not... that's not true. It's not... cheap, and you're right.
No.
You should come and go through my drawer, or I'll bring in a drawer for you tomorrow, and you can just look at it and see if there's any of that you'd like.
I'm going to find some good eye cream for you. You're doing okay for yourself. You're a successful young man.
I'm red, pink. Do they sell pink colored eye cream?
Well, you don't want to be pinker.
No, I don't. I'd like to go back to, you know.
I love this. Michael Kelly's big day. We're going to get some eye cream.
Let's get some eye cream going
up in
this place.
It's going to be exciting. He is Michael Kelly. I'm Amy Marks-Gores. Joining us next,
Major Garrett.
CBS Chief Washington Correspondent, Major Garrett.
Get serious, people.
It's Major News with Major Garrett. Our weekly conversation with CBS's Chief Washington Correspondent.
Michael Kelly, Amy Marks-Gores with you on a Thursday, and Thursdays are our favorite because we get to chat with Major Garrett, CBS Chief Washington Correspondent and host of America Decides on CBS News 24/7. Major, how are you doing this fine day?
Oh, I'm doing just fine.
Yeah.
I'm doing just fine.
Hanging in there.
Yes.
Well, let's jump into it. Let's jump into it. No need to dilly-dally. The pause on the 90-day pause on the reciprocal tariffs on everyone except for China. Can you maybe lay out for us how and why this happened?
Well, how it happened is simple. The president reversed himself. Why it happened, I think there are a number of factors. One, I think the most important set of factors began to materialize the night before last, when there was a move by the Japanese and the Chinese to sell American bonds. That sent the yield curve in a new direction higher. The 30-year mortgage rate went above 7%. That was dangerous territory for the president on a couple of levels. And there were increasing warnings about a coming recession due to the tariff applications. The White House took all that on board and factored something else vitally important to all this. The House of Representatives, led by Republicans, was having a very hard time getting agreement to pass the budget framework to move the president's tax cut agenda forward. Part of the reason that was happening is there was a tremendous amount of political uncertainty about the tariffs. People did not want to make a hard vote if they were making that hard vote in the context of all sorts of blowback at home and on the markets about tariffs. So, to improve the prospects in the House for the budget framework, without which you don't get Trump tax cuts, the president made a decision to pause. And the 90 days matters a great deal. The 90 days has much less to do with the time it's going to require to negotiate any of these trade deals. Forget that. That's not what it's about. 90 days fits almost perfectly, almost to the day, with the target that House and Senate Republicans have set for themselves to finish work on the president's tax cuts. 90 days. That's about their goal internally, and they've talked about it externally. So the pause is to give them ample room to work this out without any political distractions from tariffs that are unpopular. Tariffs on China right now, for the moment, are popular, or are popular enough. Tariffs everywhere else, very unpopular, creating massive volatility in the stock market. So, bond markets were roiled, mortgage rates went up, recession fears increased, and the politics on the House got complicated. You put those four things together, president reversed himself.
And Major, how long, what's the pinch point for Republicans? We're starting to see some folks like Ted Cruz speak out about tariffs and the yo-yo that we seem to be on at the will of the president's behavior. Is this the beginning of the erosion where maybe the Senate comes back in and says, man, we got to take this tariff power back?
I doubt it. I very much doubt it. There are legitimate reasons to have that conversation, extremely legitimate historical and constitutional reasons to have that conversation. Back when tariffs were the only form or the principal form of revenue generation in our country before we created an income tax, all tariffs flowed through Congress. The framers wrote the Constitution in that way for a very specific reason. They did not want the power in one person's hand, because tariffs are a way to conduct foreign policy, economic policy, and possibly a backdoor to graft. Because if you go tariffs in one direction, you're favoring one American industry. Well, if that American industry pays you on the back end, you could be corrupted by that process. You put all that in one person's hand, you increase volatility, and you create you create an incentive structure for corruption. Framers didn't want any of that. They wanted the tariff power to be in the hands of Congress, specifically the House, to initiate any revenue. And revenue back then was generated principally through tariffs. Now, when we got rid of tariffs and they were no longer a really important part of either revenue generation or foreign policy, after the income tax and the global economy began to take over, Congress gave presidents some limited tariff authority, especially if there's an economic emergency. Well, that's how the president is invoking all these powers. He's declared an economic emergency. And yet, that emergency, stay with me now, ladies and gentlemen, can be paused. What?
Exactly.
Huh? What? Wait a minute. If there's an emergency, if your house is on fire, okay, which is kind of a definition of an emergency, will you pause the fire hydrant? What? These are super legitimate issues. And the president's sort of like, well, whatever, I'm pausing it, I'm turning it back on, off, on, off, on, off, because I alone can do it. I alone have aggregated for myself this power. Now, look, most Republicans are still net confident with Trump on this. But would they be net confident with that with Obama or Biden or Gretchen Whitmer or Gavin Newsom or Josh Shapiro? I tend to think not, which is why these powers should be where they were constitutionally placed in the first place, in Congress.
Major, we talked about the the bloat and abuse of power in the executive branch, reaching back to several administrations. I know you were very critical of President Biden pardoning his family members and preemptively pardoning people and thinking, well, this opens the door for Trump. With Trump declaring this an emergency and exercising tariff power, would it not open the door for the next Democratic president to announce, say, a climate emergency and extend those powers even more?
Of course. Of course. I mean, if presidents are invested with the power to invent, declare, and otherwise appropriate for themselves new powers under emergency declarations, then you cease to have counterbalancing forces across our government. Yes, the courts can intervene at the margins, but only at the margins. And we're seeing how marginal the courts can really be in some of these instances. And the checks and balances really begin to fade away if presidents say, I see an emergency over there, therefore my powers have just increased. Okay. But if those powers used to flow through Congress and constitutionally ought to flow through Congress, but it takes too long for Congress to put itself together, or because Congress is so divided it can't immediately find ways to stop you, and the courts have limited powers, then each presidential election becomes a choice for who you wish to possess emergency, I don't want to say dictatorial powers, but powers far beyond our common and historical understanding of presidential powers in a checks and balances form of government.
Major, going to the Senate committee yesterday, where a former global policy director for Meta, Sarah Wynne Williams, the whistleblower, the Facebook whistleblower, testified to the Senate committee about Meta / Facebook's behind the scenes dealing with China, how it undermined national security, betrayed American values. Missouri's Senator Josh Hawley, very active on this front. What do you make of that testimony, and what could the fallout be for Meta?
Well, I'm going to have to defer to you on your description thereof, because yesterday was a very busy day for me, and I didn't see the testimony. I didn't review the testimony. I know this has been an area of emphasis and curiosity for Senator Hawley, and it sounds like well-grounded. And that testimony is probably reshaping understanding of Meta, Facebook, and its overall orientation as not only a American-based company, but a multinational company. And what it is inclined to do in pursuit of a larger audience, because that's a very large audience in China, and what do you have to do to maybe either trim your sails, curry favor? I'm not sure. Again, I didn't see the testimony. I'm not sure what all the ramifications of it are, but I will say this, broadly speaking, quite separate from the testimony. We have to stop thinking about Facebook and Apple and Google as companies. They are countries. They are countries, ladies and gentlemen, with economic power similar to large countries. They own data and information, which gives them a power similar to a large country. And they operate globally, and they have interests globally that are sometimes aligned with the United States, sometimes, as this testimony, as you summarized it for me, indicates, sometimes not. They're countries, big, big players, bigger than the regulatory apparatus in our country, the European Union, and elsewhere. And we have to understand their power and their reach is larger than, let us say, General Motors or Ford or any other kind of company that's traded on the stock exchange. They are massive, and their massiveness brings with them a kind of clout and a kind of market distorting power that I don't think we've begun to wrap our minds around politically or from a regulatory point of view.
That's That's terrifying. It's a good way to look at it, and it's terrifying. And we'll continue to keep our eye on that. Switching back to what we were talking about with all the chaos yesterday, the tariffs and Trump, within the whole tariff conversation, we did start to see a little bit of a fracturing with Elon Musk attacking Peter Navarro. And then Caroline Leavitt, boys will be boys, which didn't exactly sit with me, right? Because this is not a joke. But, but with Elon Musk, obviously when you have two powerful men with egos, they're only going to get along for so long. Is this the beginning of a real rift?
Well, what I think it is the beginning of is a reorientation of who speaks on behalf of the administration about trade. There's no accident to what happened yesterday after the president decided to pause. First, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, is supposed to be on Capitol Hill meeting privately with House Republicans about the budget. He's pulled out of that meeting, taken back to the White House. Then he's the one who comes out and does an impromptu press conference with White House reporters about the tariff pause. Nobody else. He's on CNBC this morning, as is Kevin Hassett, who's the economic advisor within the White House. Why am I name-checking these two particular people, the Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and the top White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett? Not because their names sound alike. That's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because those are the two most prominent trade doves, not warriors, doves, within the Trump White House and administration. Okay? They're the ones now being sent out to reassure the markets. They're the ones sent out to say, we're going to land this plane. The tariff stuff is not going to be anywhere near as aggressive as was announced on Liberation Day, which was driven by Navarro and other trade hawks. Not doves, but hawks inside the White House. Stephen Miller is one of them. Peter Navarro is another. Howard Lutnick is whatever he thinks the president most wants him to say as loud as he wants him to say it. And so he is, and he also has a very entrenched rivalry with Scott Bessent. Howard Lutnick wanted to be Treasury Secretary. He lost. Bessent got it. So they clash privately mostly. But he's more hawkish on trade. He's the one who goes on TV all the time and talks about robots screwing in the screws on iPhones in America, as if that's going to create any new jobs for manufacturing in America, or HVAC to keep the robots cool who are going to be working the factory assembly lines. Again, I'm not sure how many jobs that creates, but that's Howard Lutnick's spiel. So the point of what happened yesterday is not only the pause, but who talked about it and who is talking about it today. And it's the doves, not the hawks. That is the split. And in the end, mark my words, if after 90 days or 120 days or whatever it takes, most of these tariff things are very close to status quo, then we will know this was mostly a mirage, except with China.
He is Major Garrett, CBS Chief Washington Correspondent, host of America Decides on CBS News 24/7. And Major, we await with bated breath.
Soon to be renamed, and you know the name it's going to be. I just have to wait a couple more weeks before I can tell you for sure.
This is so exciting. We are on the precipice of suspense. We can't take it.
Basically, one of the things that's holding it up is furniture. It's furniture, okay? I'm waiting for some furniture, okay?
Okay.
When the furniture arrives and the new tile for the floor, I'll be able to tell you what's going to happen.
Okay, this is very exciting. I hope the furniture gets there. I think I had a couch stuck in the Suez Canal a couple of years ago,
right.
So you never know.
I just don't know what the tariff rate is going to be. So that's one of the things I got to figure out.
He's sitting on the floor. This is a tariff, baby. I don't have a couch. Major
exactly.
Garrett, thank you so much.
Thank you. Talk next week.
That's right. Major Garrett, CBS Chief Washington Correspondent, host of America Decides on CBS News 24/7. We'll chat with him next week. In the meantime, Michael Kelly, we've got some Alfonso's news to discuss. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Michael Kelly, Amy Mark scores a couple of texts coming in from a 314. I love me some Major Garrett.
Oh.
I do too.
Man, I thought it was going to be MSK. I love Major Garrett too. You know what's crazy about Major Garrett is like, turn on the national news tonight on CBS. Guess who will be talking to you? Major Garrett.
I know.
And
And
by the way, I've heard his interviews in other markets. He doesn't sound like that. He has a special affinity with KMOX and this show.
It's because we're friends. We're best friends.
Does he come to town ever and hang out with
once
you?
Once. He did with his book tour. We're not really best friends, but I like to name drop. Like, I talked to Major Garrett.
Major and I.
We also, from a 618, where does Elon get his components and high-tech equipment for his SpaceX? That was a text.
Well, I think everything comes from everywhere in the world now, which is why the whole tariff conversation is troubling to me.
Okay. Alfonso's Pizza. Alfonso's Pizza.
Which one now? Which Alfonso are we talking about?
Well, the Alfonso's that won the Mott's Madness Pizza Tournament was Alfonso's in Troy. That's Woo-hoo. Alfonso's with a Z. And man, people came out en masse to vote for this. Now, Alfonso's Pizza in Carrollton, Illinois, they shouted out the Chris and Amy Show, screenshotted our results, and they said, "Thank you, Carrollton and beyond. That was fun to watch us take the lead and then not." Congratulations, Alfonso Pizzeria in Troy, Illinois. We will be visiting again soon. If you haven't been here to Carrollton, come see us. And if you haven't been to Troy, it is definitely worth the drive. We all know that Alfonso's, and they did an S and a Z together, Alfonso's Pizza is the best. I love that. That is, you talk about a...
Can you feel the love tonight?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, we've just created a relationship.
I think we
between
did.
Between two Alfonsos.
We did.
Our mess up.
Yes.
Turned these Alfonsos like into a long... What if they wind up like, you know, growing
uniting.
Together
yeah.
and you know, sharing recipes.
Alfonso's and Alfonso's Pizzeria.
Yes.
That would be
brought
amazing.
Brought together by the hijinks of the Chris and Amy Show.
I'll tell you what, the one thing about this Mott's Madness tournament is that every time we talk about it, I want pizza. It just sounds so good. But thank you, Alfonso's Pizza in Carrollton, for the shout out. Thank you for bringing up Alfonso's in Troy as well. The runner up, a gracious runner up. Alfonso's in Carrollton, and congratulations to Alfonso's in Troy for winning our Mott's Madness tournament. And while we regret the confusion, mistakes were made, we think it turned into a real fun thing.
We created a love connection.
I think so.
Yeah.
We'll
be
really
back
did.
In 2-2, right?
Speaking of love connections, Michael Kelly is in love with the Masters.
Oh, my God.
And in just a couple of minutes, we're going to chat with Dan Reardon, KMOX golf reporter, live in Augusta. It's the Chris and Amy Show.
Love it.
On KMOX.